Dealing with Questions, the 11th talk in a series on prayer, was presented by Ron Julian on March 7, 1999, at Reformation Fellowship. The copyright for this recording is held by Gutenberg College, Inc., 1999. Gutenberg College is a nonprofit organization, and contributions may be made at www.gutenberg.edu. This material may be copied and distributed in whole for non-commercial and educational purposes, subject to the inclusion of this introduction, all other rights reserved. The following recording has a brief break in the middle and the loss of some teaching at the end. These are the result of the original 60-minute tape switching to the second side and running out before the end of the teaching.
I want to do something a little different today. After my teaching last week, I got a couple of big questions from people about what I had said and some issues that it had raised. And so today I'd kind of like to put those questions out on the table and have a chance for us to talk about them. So I'm going to talk first, say some things, and then I'd like to invite you all to participate with me in working on these questions. Now, you understand, prayer that we're talking about doesn't start out as an intellectual problem. I mean, the pressure is on and human beings cry out to God. It's a very natural thing to have happen. But sooner or later, if we actually come to God and we start to look in His revelation and see His own portrayal of Himself to us, that we start to see what sort of a being is He. How big is He? How much in charge is He? Something of what He is like. Then we start to have questions, natural sorts of questions, I think, about what exactly is involved in prayer. And we would not be the first group of people who have wrestled with the question of why exactly is it that we pray to a God who is in charge of everything and knows everything already. That's the sort of thing that we're going to be talking about here today. I just need to say, as we start out, that this is a little different than what we have been doing. And if any of you have not been a part of our discussion on prayer, we have been going along and looking at particular passages and sort of building up bit by bit, piece by piece, a picture of what the Bible says about prayer. If you haven't been a part of that, this discussion today may seem totally wacko to you. I'm building on a whole series of things that I've been arguing represent the biblical picture of prayer, and based on that picture, then, there are some questions that come up. I hope if you're in that position, you will be patient with us and believe that we're not quite as wacko as we sound. The questions that I got both have to do with the problems inherent in praying to a sovereign God in one way or another. I was talking last week about the language of Paul encouraging his readers to help him with their prayers and to strive together with him in their prayers. And one of the questions I got had to do with that language about helping him. And essentially the question came down to, if God has already decided that He's going to bless Paul and nothing is going to keep God from blessing Paul anyway, then it seems sort of fake to talk about people's prayers helping him. I mean, what sort of help is it? If I'm not actually causing something to happen, then, you know, it's like riding on a tandem bicycle where the back pedals aren't connected. You know, you can move your feet around, but what's the point? If I don't move my feet around, the bicycle's still going to go or not. It's not really up to me. So what's the point? It seems sort of condescending. I mean, you know, it's like the kids on the back and you tell them, you go ahead, you pedal, you know, it's really helping. And of course it's not doing anything. And what's sooner or later, the kid's going to feel rooked. Like, well, what was I doing all that work for if you're just going to do it anyway? So I think the question is something along those lines. The second question came to me as an email. And let me read you the question. Sunday, Ron, if I understood you correctly, You talked about God's using our prayers to teach us to recognize Him as the source of life, and because of that, how we can be a part of God's helping others by praying for them. You referred to that gratifying emotional reaction that comes from asking for something, for ourselves or others, and seeing it come to pass, and pointed out where Paul asks for prayers that others might experience this and know that they have participated in his ministry. My question is about the necessity for literal prayer. As I was thinking about what you said, it occurred to me that many times I've been concerned about needs, mine and others, and have not prayed, but instead was simply aware of and comforted by the fact that God is in control, knows what I need, and loves me. When the needs were taken care of, I experienced a sense of gratitude toward God, relief of my concern, and also a confirmation of my attitude that God was trustworthy. I did not feel that I had participated in God's work, but then I didn't pray, and it doesn't occur to me to miss that feeling. I didn't expect to feel it, and the other feelings were quite nice enough themselves. There have been other times when I have prayed for others' needs out of a sense of duty. I didn't really experience caring about their needs, but I believed I should, and so I did the only thing I knew that approximated the right thing to do. When God fulfilled those needs, again, I didn't feel like I'd participated in His work, though I had prayed, and I didn't feel any of those other nice feelings, gratitude or relief or encouragement to trust God, either. Unlike with the sense of participation, I did miss those nice feelings. So the questioner is saying, in the first case, when I trusted God without specifically asking for something, there was the feeling of gratitude when it came about. In this case, praying out of duty, there is no sense of gratitude at the end because you were just being dutiful in the first place, if I'm understanding the question. Still, other times, I have both cared and have literally prayed. I had the nice feelings, but again, didn't have the sense of participation. So it seems that whether I pray or not, I never feel like I've participated in God's work unless I literally do something to affect the situation, such as working or giving money or something. I guess I don't really think my praying makes a difference. It's something I sometimes do because sometimes I just have to, emotionally speaking, but at the same time, I'm confident that God will do the best thing, whether or not I literally ask Him, and I can't see how it matters that I do. It seems to me if the point of prayer is a subjective experience to teach me about trusting God, literal prayer is unnecessary. What seems necessary for that effect is my concern for the need and my consciousness of trusting God, or at least the sense that He's where my solution has to come from. Whether I address words to Him or not seems irrelevant. Is this a mistake? I cannot see how my literally praying could possibly make a difference in God's actions. I'm not sure I would want it to. I think I may have read something by C.S. Lewis somewhere which talked about this. If I remember correctly, he said why you pray or don't pray is far more important than whether you pray. That makes sense to me. It seems to me that what Paul really wants from his readers is that they be a particular kind of people rather than that they perform a particular kind of behavior, one not necessarily connected with that kind of people. So why does Paul ask his readers to pray for him if literal prayer in itself is not necessary? Do they just need something concrete to do to work out the caring for which he's really asking? If so, that feels kind of patronizing, sort of like when your young child wants to help so you give him some meaningless but harmless task that gives him the illusion he's involved. This sounds unworthy of Paul, and anyway, as I've said, praying doesn't have that effect on me. If he just wants them to care, and they don't, praying isn't going to fix that, as I've also discovered. So what's the point? I guess another way of asking the question is, if I truly care about something, and if I'm confident that God can be trusted to deal with it, and I don't feel particularly moved to talk to God about it, should I anyway? If so, why? It's times like this that make me regret my chosen profession. Many people get to spend their whole working lives not having to demonstrate their ignorance in front of large groups of people. that that's not a privilege that I get. This is a very big question. There's a lot involved with it. I have tried to sort of jot down some thoughts that I have about that seem to me to be related to this, but I'm not sure when I'm done speaking if I will have gotten to the heart of what's involved here. So I want to make a few comments, and then I really do want to invite you all to participate, to make some comments, ask some questions. I don't think this will be the end of this topic. It's going to come up again as we look at some more passages down the line. But I thought maybe I could stop here, acknowledge that I myself am still sort of trying to put this picture together. You have to understand when we're up here, certainly when I'm teaching about prayer, it's not because I think that I know all the answers or understand how it all works. I'm a student of the Bible. And it seems to me, as I go to passage after passage that talks about prayer, I see certain key issues involved. And I'm trying to get those key issues across to you, what I see the Bible's primary concern to be. I picture it like, you know, for a little while, I'm a guide. There are certain forks in the road, and I'm saying, I think the Bible is saying that you got to take that road there. And in fact, if you look around, there's a lot of people who have taken this road over here, and they've stayed over on this side of the river, and I think they were wrong to do that. They needed to turn at this road. They needed to cross the river, and the place where you need to be is over here. So that's what I'm telling you. I think we need to be over here across the river. However, it's big territory and very complicated, and I'm not saying that I know everything about what's over there on that other side of the river, but I am fairly convinced that that's where we ought to be. So what I have been telling you is that sort of big, let's take this turn and get over on the other side of the river stuff. This question is, could you tell me exactly where this is located and how far it is from this landmark and how long is it going to take us to get there? And I don't know. So I can tell you what I do know, what makes sense to me at this point. What I'm going to say has the potential to open a huge can of worms, so we'll just see. First of all, it seems to me that when we come to God and look at the picture of God that we see in the Bible, that we face this problem of how to conceptualize him on the level of personal interaction. Because on the one hand, God is a person. He is not an abstract force or principle. He is a being with a mind and purpose and will. He talks to us. He decides things. He tells us things we don't know. I mean, all of that is personal. And yet, at the same time, he's not like any person that we know, because he is the sovereign creator of all. There are no surprises. When I talk to you, I tell you things because I think maybe you don't know them. But I can't do that with the person, God, that I'm talking to, because I know he knows it already. I mean, we see that in Jesus, in the Lord's Prayer, where he encourages us to come to God understanding that he knows what we need before we ask. That's the kind of God that we're dealing with. So there are intuitions that I have about what it means to deal with a person that are wrong when they come to God. Somehow, all of the ideas that I have that somehow about, if I only give this person enough information, I can change their mind and they will act on my behalf or something. It's not like that. God's purposes are set. God knows what he's doing. So in that sense, all of those kinds of intuitions I have are wrong. So it seems to me that the extremes on either end, it's fairly clear that we need to stay away from them. The extreme that would see God as just sort of the sum of everything that is in creation, he's just sort of the operating principle that makes the world the way it is, that's on one extreme a very impersonal view of God, and I would say the Bible clearly shows that that's not true. That's not the God that we're dealing with. This is the God who decided to create. This is the God who put the burning bush before Moses and talked to him. That's the God that we're dealing with here. On the other hand, we have to avoid that extreme, which I think sometimes we in the church tend to fall into, of seeing God as just another person like me. He's my buddy. He's the person, you know, I think about him. I have to talk to him a lot because, you know, naturally, think about how your friends would feel if you never talked to them. I mean, they would feel bad. Well, this is the God who has sovereignly determined everything that I am. There's not a single particle of me that is not intimately known by him. It's not like I have to bring myself to him so that he can get to know me. That's not the way it works. So that extreme, that picture of God being so personal that he's just another one of the guys, we have to reject that as well. This is the ground of all being. This is the one who knows everything. This is the one who determines what the world is. That's who we're dealing with. So we can't just treat him like one of the guys, but we can't just treat him like an abstraction either. Somewhere in the middle of that is where God is. And if we're going to come to interact with him in a way that fits what he is, then it has to be somewhere in the middle, it seems to me. It seems clear to me in the Bible that the picture that the Bible presents is that God expects us to deal with him person to person. I mean, how else could it be, really? I am a person, and he is a person. He's very different than me, but he is a person nonetheless. And the picture is of me coming to terms not just with ideas that are out there, but with the person, God, who is my creator. I mean, sooner or later, those ideas are going to confront me with the one with which I have to do. He, him, I'm going to have to deal with him. So that seems clear to me as well, and it's not surprising that that would be the case. The question that I have wrestled with, and it is at the heart of the questions I'm talking about here, is what place does personal interaction, second person interaction, God, you and me kind of interaction, what place does that have in the life of a godly, mature, faithful person? What place should it have? That's the question. It seems clear to me from the Bible that it plays a place. It seems clear to me from experience that there is a perversion of that that can happen, a kind of view of prayer that is not what it ought to be in the life of a godly person. But as we try to hone in on, so what is the Bible saying it should look like? I think that's not such an easy question. In fact, many of the things that I'm talking about here today, these are things that over the years we at the study center have had a chance to kick around and talk about. And for myself, I'm not so sure that we're of one mind on even the all how this goes together. I know that Jack and I have had conversations in the past, and I'm hoping that he will make some comments at the end here, because I think we might be looking at this a little differently at this point. But I'm saying this is that place where I'm just trying to put the pieces together. I offer you what I've got so far, and then you can correct me when we're done. Okay. One of the hang-ups, obviously, that we face when we come to this question is the sovereignty of God. Now, I don't know how many of you are with me at this point in believing that God is totally sovereign, the determiner of all that happens in reality. For the sake of argument, I ask you to just, you know, hypothetically grant me that that's the case, and let's do a thought experiment here and think about how this might work itself out. I would argue that the fact that God is totally sovereign does not tell me in advance how much God is making dependent on me. Because my understanding of the sovereignty of God is that God is working through the things in his creation, including me. Many of the things that happen in the world happen in spite of me. I didn't cause it to happen. I didn't pray for it to happen. It happens anyway. But some of the things in the world happen through me. They're what God wanted to happen, but I am the means by which those things come about in the world. So right now, I mean, we could say it could have been that the ideas that we're talking about right now, God could have supernaturally stuffed them into your heads. You wouldn't have even had to come here. Just, you know, whoosh, there was. But in fact, what's happening is I'm talking about them. maybe an idea is going to occur to you through what I say that would not have occurred to you if I hadn't said it. Well, that's a part of God's plan for your life, but it doesn't mean that I didn't do anything. He had decided that that's the way it's going to be, and I did something. Both of those things are true. That's how I understand the two things to work together. So it isn't that we divide the world into the things that God is responsible for and the things that I'm responsible for, because God's responsible for everything. And then he has various means of bringing those things about, including me. So in our little thought experiment, and you probably have heard me say this before, but I think it's helpful when we try to sort these questions out. Let's just imagine God could be sovereign in this way, on this extreme. He could say to us, essentially, I have decided that what you do in the world is irrelevant. I am going to sovereignly determine things, and you can just go ahead and do whatever you want. It's going to have no effect on anything. You know, if I don't want the grass wet, you turn on the hose and the water won't come on because I haven't decided that it'll happen. If I don't want this book on the ground, you let go of it and it'll just float there because I'm not ready for that book to get to the ground yet. You determine nothing. I'm in charge of everything, and you might as well not pray to me because it doesn't matter what you ask. I've already decided how it's going to be, and it's totally irrelevant what you ask. Now you see how that's a way that God could be sovereign. He could have just be sovereign in the sense that, of course, yes, he's in charge of everything, but what I do makes no difference. That is not the view of the sovereignty of God that the Bible pictures, as I understand it. Now, let's go over to the other extreme. And extreme in the sense of, well, I want to concentrate on the topic of prayer here now that we're talking about. God could say to us, I am going to sovereignly determine, I'm going to make the world be what I want the world to be, but I'm going to work through your prayers. And in fact, nothing in the world is going to happen unless you pray for it. The sun will not come up. The wind will not blow. There will be no oxygen in the atmosphere. The world will cease to exist unless somebody somewhere is praying for that to happen. Nothing will happen unless you ask me to. I'm not going to do a single thing for you that somebody is not asking me to do. Now, do you see how in both of those pictures, God is sovereign in that the world ends up being exactly the way God wants it to be? But in one scenario, he makes it be what he wants it to be totally in spite of what I pray for. And in the other scenario, he makes it to be the way he wants it to be, totally dependent on what I pray for. Everyone's praying for the right stuff because that's how things happen in the world. Does that make sense to you? Do you see what I'm getting at here? Okay, well, I would argue that both of those extremes are very easy to reject. Neither of those is an accurate picture of how God's sovereignty works in the world. It's somewhere in the middle. And I would say, what I've been trying to argue as we've looked at various passages in the Bible talking about prayer, I would say it's in the middle with the dial leaning over toward, it was on this side, I guess, with the dial leaning toward God doesn't need me to make things happen. But that doesn't mean that my prayers and my actions in this world have no impact on anything. I think they do. The classic example would be that God has chosen me for salvation. Nonetheless, that comes about through my responding in faith to him. He chooses me through my choice. And if I choose against him, then he didn't choose me. And if I choose for him, he chose me. And you understand when I'm saying that, I don't mean to eliminate his choice. He really made that choice. That's what I understand. But he works his will in the world through the activities of what happens in the world. That's how I understand it. At least for the sake of argument, just grant me that as, you know, so that you can follow my argument. Then at the end, you can say, I don't buy the whole thing, and that's fine. So the sovereignty of God doesn't immediately answer the question, how big a role do I play in the world through my prayers? I could picture my role as being crucial and determinative. God has given me the responsibility of figuring out what needs to happen in the world and praying for it to happen. That's my job, is to figure out what's going on and ask God to do it. And God could still be sovereign, completely and totally sovereign in that picture, as I understand things. I don't think that's how far it goes. But I do believe that there is a place for my prayers, that they have something to do with what happens in the world. This is where the hard part comes. This is where the really hard part comes. How should we picture that? What is my motivation? What would impel me to go to God and ask Him for something? Now, I want to be clear here. I'm concentrating on the asking kind of prayers because the Bible talks a lot about those kind. It's not the only kind of praying that we do. We talk to God about a lot of things, expressing our gratitude, confessing our sins, I mean, all of that kind of stuff. That's appropriate as well, and I'm not denying that that plays a part. But I want to just concentrate now on the question that was raised was about those passages where Paul was encouraging people to pray for him, to ask God to do something on his behalf. And that's what I'm kind of concentrating on here, is those kinds of questions, those issues where we're asking God to do something. How should I view that? Do my prayers determine things? Should I think about my prayers in that way? That I'm actually moving God to do something? Well, here's what I think we do know. God does many good things for me and for others without my asking Him to do it. And we saw that picture of the picture of the Spirit praying for us when we don't know how to pray for ourselves. God is committed to working things out for our good, and it is not dependent on our figuring out what we need and making it happen through prayer. God is praying for us, is the picture that we saw, that He Himself knows perfectly what it is we need and is bringing that about. So I don't have to have this sense of panic that somehow I've got to figure out what needs to happen and pray for it. I can rest in the goodness of God. That seems to me to be an underlying principle that we need to understand. We also know that God sometimes does not do what we ask. We've seen clearly in the Bible that it is not a question of, if I just have enough faith, I'll get whatever I ask for. We'll look at some of the passages that seem to suggest that that's the case, and I will argue that that's not what they're saying. But what I've been arguing so far is that that's not the case. I can't just say, God, I totally believe you're going to do this for me and be assured that that's going to happen. That's not true. So it's not a cause and effect kind of, I pray and I know that I'm causing something to happen. We know that at least one good thing is correlated with my request, and that's salvation. It was God's choice to reach out and save me, and yet that is not separate from my reaching out to Him. Both of those things are happening at the same time. And we know that the Bible invites us to pray, and that the Bible has many examples of God responding to people's prayers. So I'm at this place where some of you in your questions to me have basically very kindly implied, Ron, this doesn't work. This doesn't follow where it is you're sitting. There are these two things that I believe at the same time. I am counting on God's wisdom and goodness to do good for me, quite apart from my figuring out what I need and asking for it. I think that it is right and appropriate for me to just trust that God will do right by me. Nevertheless, I also believe that the biblical picture is that my prayers are significant and that they make a difference. I do not believe that a corollary to the fact that God is working all things together for my good is that my prayers do not determine things. I think at times they do. At times I think God works out His intention to bless me or you by having me pray about it. His sovereign purpose is served best by that personal struggle that I go through, that place where I come to wrestle with God, to talk to Him about what is on my mind, to ask Him concerning the deep longings of my heart, and to have that interaction, that response both ways, that response yes or that response no, that that the picture that since God has everything worked out, therefore there's no real reason to pray for him, to him, need to be on the same level as saying, because God has everything worked out, there's no need for me to do anything. I can just sit here. I don't need to have faith. I don't need to act in love. I don't need to make any choices. God's already worked it out. The fact is that I do need to act in love, and I do need to make choices. And I think somewhere in there, it seems to me that the Bible is suggesting that as much as my action in dropping this book puts it on the floor, my action in praying, at times, it elicits a response from God, if we want to put elicit in quotation marks. But nonetheless, there is a meaningful way that I can talk about him responding to what I've asked for. So the second questioner said, I cannot see how my literally praying could possibly make a difference in God's actions, and I'm not sure I want it to. That seems to me to be saying too much. At least I could not say that. I think the kind of example where God gave to Elijah the task of praying for the rain. Clearly, Elijah's prayers made a difference. That is, the rain was not going to come until he prayed. And at least in that kind of situation, I think Elijah could have the sense that he was being obedient, and that God was responding to his request. I mean, it's hard to know how else to think about it. I keep going and going, and there's no rain, and there's no rain, and there's no rain, and God has told me that when I pray for rain, it will rain, and then I ask God for rain, and it rains. I would call that a response. You could look at it from the bigger picture and say it was God's sovereign determination that it was going to rain at that time. And I'd say that's true as well. But that's where we get into that problem of putting together God's purposes and ours at the same time. So it seems to me that there is a place in there somewhere that it is too much to say that my asking for something, even though I have a general confidence in God's goodness, I think it's too much to say that my asking for something, therefore, is irrelevant and not tied to the results. But, obviously, I think the bigger biblical picture is one that I should not see myself as one whose my task is to keep going to God and putting in my quarter and getting out stuff. I mean, that's not the picture either. So there's a meaningful place for my prayers, but this is not... He's not a shopping center where I go and load up on stuff either. There's this balance in there somewhere. And where is that balance? Okay. It's clear to me. If you ask the question, why would I pray? There are some reasons that are clear to me. If I am troubled at heart, taking my troubles to God can be a part of a working out of my faith. I am impelled. I think that's the picture we see of Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane, as we talked about that before. He knew the situation. He understood what was going to happen. And yet, the burden of what he was facing was very great on him emotionally, and he took that burden to God. If there's a way out of this, please, let's take it. That seems to me clear why a person would do that. Jesus didn't step back and abstractly say, I know God has his purposes, and I know that this has all been worked out, and really I know that there's no other way to do this. So I think, you know, that's the way it's going to be, so I'll just, it would be irrational to pray. That's not his attitude. He's dealing person to person with the transcendent Father who is listening to him, the human being, Jesus, take his troubles and emotional pressures to him. That makes sense to me. It makes sense to me that if in the middle of those pressures I am tempted to be doubtful and to be mistrusting God, it makes sense to me that I would go to him and wrestle with him in prayer is kind of the language that we use. I mean, the idea of, you know, hey, what's going on? Why don't you do this? Help me to understand. Give me the strength to hold on. Why aren't you doing this for me? What should I think about this? I mean, that kind of wrestling with God praying makes sense to me. And then, as I said, I mean, expressions of gratitude when I'm grateful and confession of sin and so on, all those things make sense to me as well. What's hazy to me, and some of you will probably think, he must be insane, because this is the part that's so clear in the church. This is what everybody knows, is that if Christianity means anything, it means having a personal relationship with Jesus. So, of course, I mean, all the other stuff is up for grabs, but that this is essentially a deep, emotional, interpersonal relationship that's worked out like my deepest interpersonal relationships in life, that's kind of a given. Well, it's not a given exactly for me. I'm trying to see the picture of God and us as the Bible presents it. So to me, the question is a little hazy. Actually, it's a lot hazy. When we come to that question about the rightness and the need for me to personally interact with God, that personally, you know, that's what the question was talking about. If I feel confident that God is in charge and I trust him, how important is it that I talk to him about it? That I say, you, God, I trust you, or God, I trust you, but I'm going to ask anyway, would you please do this? I mean, how important is it that be going on? That's a difficult question, I think. It seems to me, as I think about it up to this point, that general confidence, that trust in God, I believe that you will do well, that's a very good thing. That's a very commendable and worthwhile thing. That's a place we want to get to. It does seem to me, and here's where I'm kind of stepping out on a limb in my own thinking. You help me figure this out. It seems to me that there's a difference between an impersonal, I think things are going to turn out all right, and a personal, you, God, will do well by me. This is the place where my thinking is going right now, that it seems to me if there's anything, a compulsion of that thing that would say the good person, the person who is godly and righteous, ought to be a person of prayer, I think part of the reason may be in the idea that it is necessary for me as a person to come to terms with the person who is God. That I actually, it's not just that I come to understand ethics, but that I come to understand that there is a God who is the source of those ethics, and that I come to know him. It seems to me that the Bible is suggesting that that is a part of what a godly person wants to do, is to interact with the God who is really there. So, it seems to me, though, if my confidence, I trust you, God, it's not just I think things will turn out okay, but it is you, God, are the source of life, and I believe that you will be the source of that life and will do right in this situation. Essentially, that is the kind of interpersonal understanding between God and myself that is at the heart of prayer. If I don't feel compelled at that spot to ask him to do something, because my understanding and my deep feeling at the moment is, I really trust God to do what is right. I think God's going to do the right thing here. And I have that attitude not just that somehow the world will be okay, but it is toward the God that I have come to know. He is the one who is going to make things right. You, God, are the one who's going to make things right. That confidence in his person is very, very much at the heart of what the biblical idea of prayer would be about. So that kind of confidence seems to me to be right and appropriate. Now, getting out even further on the limb that I'm busy sawing off here, I picture prayer at this point as a part of my being a seeker before God. Remember the passage in Hebrews about the one who comes to God must believe that he is and that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. I so far am very much convinced that prayer is not meant to be a technique that makes me more spiritual. It's not if I'm feeling dutiful about toward God that if I pray necessarily that it's going to have some spiritual impact on me and now I will be changed into a person who's dynamic and so on. I don't think that experience suggests that it doesn't always happen that way. I don't think that's the idea. But I think prayer is a part of me, the person that I am, my real feelings, my real desires, my real questions, reaching out farther than I am. I'm reaching out to the God that I know is there. Help me, I'm in trouble, they're in trouble, help them. I'm not really concerned about their troubles and this bothers me. Help me, show me the way, make me a wise person, break my heart. I mean, it is me coming up against my own limitations, my own concerns, my own troubles, learning to be concerned about more than my own troubles and my own limitations, and in that process, reaching out to the God that I know who is there. I don't even think that I could defend this to you at this point. I could try. But it seems to me that there are ultimately potential dangers if I never talk to God in the second person. That if I always think of God as out there, essentially it would be easy for him to become an abstraction. He's just an ethical set of ideas or something out there. That I'm not. It seems to me that the biblical picture of people praying to God is one of real persons coming to terms with the real person that they have come to know that God is, or that they want to know that he is. So I'm not at all in the place where I would say, so what you need to do is set aside an hour a day and pray whether you feel like it or not. That wouldn't be the worst thing you ever did. There are a lot of things you've done with your time that would be a bigger waste of time than that, I think. But I'm not saying that's the road to true spirituality. But wherever it is you're standing, the question you have to ask yourself, I think, is, am I dealing with God or am I avoiding him? Am I coming to terms with you, the one who's in charge of my life, the one who made me and who knows me? Am I coming to terms with you? And it seems to me that it would be very difficult for us to do that without personally interacting with that one ourselves, to say, I want what you have promised. I trust you. It seems to me that there has to be a place for that in there somehow. I can't see right now really how, given human beings and the way we're made and the way personal interactions work, I just can't see how it could be any other way. So, why did Paul urge them to pray? Well, he wanted them to care enough about him that it was a big deal to them. I think it would be fine with him if they had the attitude, God, we really know that you're going to do right by Paul. But if it was a big enough deal, this is the apostle that God has given us to teach us the truth. And he's in jail and he might die and we might never have the opportunity to hear anything from him again. Does that register with me? It's hard for that to be an abstraction. At that point, yes, I have a general confidence that God is going to do right, but I also have a wise understanding that what Paul has to contribute to the world is great, and I want it. I'm calling out to God. I care about his suffering. Look at all he's done for me, and look at what he's going through. What I want is I want you to help him. I want him to be relieved of his suffering. I want him to be able to continue to teach. Those things mean something to me. And I just think it's the natural human interaction at that spot to, rather than, I mean, not that there's anything wrong with that confidence, I know you're going to do right, but there's something very appropriate, I think, about asking, especially when I think I don't have this view of the world that says God's going to do everything regardless of what I pray. I can have the very real sense that God himself may have wanted to bring these things together. Paul's need and my prayer. It's not that Paul needs me to pray, but it may be that God is working in the situation at this point where my prayers are a very meaningful part of what he wants to accomplish. I can't know in advance that they're not. So it seems to me ultimately that personal interaction, that taking the things that are of concern to me to God, that has to be a part of the equation. And if it's not a part of the equation, it seems to me that there's something not quite right there. Okay. Well, I haven't given you any biblical evidence for anything today. I haven't looked at any passages. I've just tried to tell you the best I can how I would respond to the questions. I know there are issues in those questions I haven't addressed, and I've already talked for a long time. So let me open it up to you and give you a chance to show me the light here. Larry.
Well, first of all, I'd like to say that I very much appreciate what you said today. I thought it's pretty profound, actually, and helpful in terms of thinking about God's sovereignty and how it works, and also in relationship to the issue of prayer. And it's very helpful, and I'd encourage you to write your book about it. Because I think it's something that's really needed. It seems to me that I'm going to try to capture what I think you've said and maybe say it in a different way that maybe helps me. And in saying so, I'm not professing to be an expert on prayer or even be very good at it. And in listening to the question, it's easier to see issues in other people, and then when it's raised up there, then you get to see them in yourself. So I've kind of seen myself here too. And I think there's a sense in which what I'm hearing you say, there's a sense in which praying expresses a kind of moral, psychological vulnerability that not praying doesn't. That I'm really saying, when I pray, I'm really saying, I'm putting myself out there in a sense. I'm saying what's important to me. I'm saying what I really want. Like in a relationship, you're talking about God being relational. If I have a relationship with you and I just stand back here and don't say anything, that requires no kind of vulnerability on my part. But if I come to you and I say, hey Ron, this is important to me, I'm expressing a kind of vulnerability that's not there if I just stand back. Does that make sense? And yes. I'm saying, I'm putting myself out there in a sense, and it's like I'm trusting in the words you used, where I'm trusting and placing my confidence in the goodness and sovereignty of God. That when I wouldn't pray. Now, I'm not saying I have to stand up or I have to say it out loud, but there's a sense in which even doing it privately in my own heart or my own mind is expressing a kind of vulnerability before God that not doing it doesn't.
Okay. Can I say one thing to that before you say any more?
Sure.
See, that what you're saying is right at the heart of the problem, in a sense. I think what I'm inclined to think is that in a certain sense, what you're saying is right on. What the question is raising, and what some people would propose, is, but couldn't there be, the fact is that I know that there is nothing hidden from God. I mean, he knows me. There's nothing about me that I can hide. Right. So there could be another reason why I don't open myself up vulnerably in that way in prayer at a particular time, and that is my deep knowledge that I am opened up before God. I know that he knows me, he knows the situation, and I just have a deep trust in him in doing what is right. what you're describing, I think, is right. In our wrestling with things, it's just like the confession of sin and all of that kind of stuff. It's that place where I come to terms with the idea, and even though God knows all about it, the fact is my wrestling with Him and talking to Him about it and opening myself up and showing my real desires and all of that kind of stuff, there's something right in me in doing that, and there would have been something wrong for me to be reserved as if I thought somehow I could keep what I really am from God. So what I'm saying is there could be a very wrong reason for not praying in a certain situation, and what you're describing would be the submission to the truth and being vulnerable and all of that, and that would be right. I can just imagine a situation, though, where I feel like in my interactions with God in the past, I have done that. I have been vulnerable. He knows what I want. He knows what I need. And at this spot, I don't feel the need to tell Him again what it is I want and need. I know that He knows it, and I'm just confident. You know me. You know what I want. I trust You. That could be a meaningful prayer that is not, it is not reserved, even though I haven't actually spelled out, you know, gone and pulled out, see this and this and this, because I feel like I've done that already. Instead, I'm just being trusting. So
I wouldn't necessarily make a distinction between what you were just describing and praying, necessarily.
Right. Well, no, I wouldn't either. That's true.
Yeah. It seems part of what I'm saying is there's this process that we're in, and where God is growing us up and maturing our faith, and that expresses itself in some way.
Yeah, I think so. And it's just hard for me to believe that is not going to involve in some way me interacting with God on a personal level.
Right.
I hate to put you on the spot, Jack, but would you take the microphone and say something? I'd be sort of interested in having your thoughts on what I've said.
Well, I have about 117 ideas, and I'll try to remember 17 of them.
Okay.
Well, it seems to me that there's still a problem that remains in spite of all that you have said, and that I think is at the heart of the questions that you received, and that is, unlike the book that falls to the ground, according to God's law, I think we are to understand prayer to be not according to God's law, but according to God's wisdom. I mean, sorry, freedom. The freedom of His choice, the freedom of His will. And that we have this sense that I'm not really making any difference if I'm not somehow moving God in His freedom to do A rather than B or neither. That is, we have this sense that either God's will is undetermined and I can determine it through my prayer, or that He's determined A and I can talk Him out of that and get B instead. There's a sense that we have that that's making a difference, and anything short of that is not really making a difference. If that's a right way to think about it, I would land fairly firmly in, yes, prayer does not make a difference. I think that's right. Prayer does not make a difference.
Right. But that, I wouldn't argue that that's the way to put it together, though.
Pardon?
If we define it the way you said, I would agree with you. Prayer doesn't make a difference. But there's more to say, I think.
I can't remember now the language that the email was responding to, the language you used, that we participate. Was that it?
Well, that's another part of the problem. I'm not sure that I meant to say exactly what it sounded to me like the email was thinking that I was saying. Mm-hmm. So that's another part that we need to kind of work on.
But let me... The email was asking, you know, it seems sort of patronizing that God would give me the illusion of making a difference if I'm not making a difference. But let me change the analogy. It seems to me that if somebody is someone or something is coming to the Holt Center that my children really want to come to, I see the advertisement on television. I buy tickets for them. It's a done deal. We're going to go. And then I just sit back and wait. And we see an advertisement together, and they turn to me and say, oh, please, can we go to that? And I say, okay. The delight that might come to them from my from my giving assent to that is not in any way mitigated by the fact that I had bought the tickets 2 months ago or 2 weeks ago. What delights them is that I am going to give them the desire of their heart. The desire of their heart is going to be met. And it seems to me that that's the satisfaction that comes in prayer, is not the satisfaction of having somehow made a difference, of somehow changed, having changed God's mind, but in having been given the desire of my heart by my Father, by the giver of all good gifts. The giver of all good gifts has had me in mind and has given me the desire of my heart. It seems to me that that's the real joy and delight built into the nature of prayer. So what that suggests to me is that we really need to undergo a paradigm shift. I think I was trained all of my life through my Christian environment to see the ground of prayer as duty, and in fact the ground of prayer is desire, and that we have to change that. We have to go through a paradigm shift there. What's important about prayer is what desires are driving it, not am I doing it or not. Not am I doing my duty, but what do I want? And my prayers are going to be as reflective as anything in this life of what it is that I want. That's why what you said last week was very helpful to me and very enlightening, that strive with me in your prayers that I might come to you, that what he's really exhorting them to is not a religious action, but primarily he's resorting them to a certain set of priorities and values and desires and saying, see this and the role that I can play in your life as so important to you that it's something that you really want. How will we know that you really want it? It'll make its way into your prayer life. And that really makes a big difference. I mean, that makes a lot of sense to me. It's interesting that he doesn't say, there's this guy here in Jerusalem, Zedekiah the day laborer, who doesn't have a job. Pray that he'll find a job in the next month. Because that wouldn't be to the point, it seems to me. And yet that would be very commonplace in our circles, that as a matter of duty, my duty is to make a difference, to kind of call the 1-900 number with God that's going to weigh my vote and maybe sway him to take care of Zedekiah the day laborer that he otherwise wouldn't take care of if we didn't weigh in with our vote. And that's the way I would be inclined to take that passage that you taught us last week, but that I think you're right. That's not what he's saying.
Okay. Everything you said...
And I'll say more if you want.
No, I want to deal with what you've... what I'm thinking is that it might be worthwhile to next week to continue this discussion. I'll talk to you about it afterwards, but maybe we could both work something up and talk it over a little bit. I don't know. Everything you said, past when you said moving the ground of praying from duty to desire, everything you said past there I agreed with, and that sounded really good. The rest of it was... I need some clarification. Okay, you were talking about whether my prayers make a difference, and if I remember, we were proposing the two things, either God's will is free and undeterminable by me, or else it is somehow fixed one place and I can come along and move it and make it something else. And that if it's not the second one there, then I should describe it as my prayers don't make a difference. Is that what you were saying? Something like that? Say it again.
Well, that if the things that we're talking about are not gravity and things that are law-driven,
right,
but things that are within the freedom of God, then our tendency is to think that my prayers don't make a difference unless either there are some things that God has left undetermined in his sovereignty, mm-hmm, and he's going to wait for me to decide what he should do, or that he's determined A and he wants me to talk and I will talk him out of it and have the universe go B instead of A.
Okay.
That would be making a difference.
Okay.